Coffee Roasters open in Pioneer Square and Slough for takeout and soon indoor seating. Order coffee and more at elmcoffeeroasters.com.
Welcome to this episode of How Do I Get Your Job, a podcast from The Daily where we interview professionals to find out how you can get a job just like theirs. My name is Patrick Harley.
And I'm Anita Zen.
We're here today with John Tomasik, an artist in residence for the Department of Communications at the University of Washington. How are you doing today, John?
Very well. Thank you, Patrick. Thanks for asking. Hi, Anita.
So just to dive right in here today, you've worked a long career in journalism over the years, now teaching it a good amount for the department. How did you get into journalism?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually, as an undergrad, wanted to be a journalism major, but I was talked out of it by my father, who said, "You don't go to a liberal arts school to get an education and major in journalism. What are you even thinking? You got to learn something first. You can always write about it later." So I majored in history, but I always kind of wanted to be a journalist, or I thought I would be good at being a journalist. But then I kind of got way off track for many years. I went to grad school twice. Basically, I ended up writing in grad school as a way to support myself as a grad student. I did a lot of editing and rewriting, a little bit of ghostwriting for other graduate students. The short answer is I started writing because I kind of needed some money as a grad student. And when I came out of college with a history and political science degree, I was like, where do I get a job exactly? What am I doing? And people would say, like, what do you want to do? What are you good at? And I said, well, I'm kind of good at writing. And they're like, oh, God, good luck. So I was like, what do you do when you're good at writing? You go back to school, basically. So I stayed in school for many, many years, about 7 or 8 more years. And I got graduate degrees. I got a graduate degree in history again. And then I went for a PhD and basically finished coursework and then fell in love and moved to San Francisco, which is a whole nother story with my wife. But I started writing and I got a job at the United Nations, actually, after I got my master's degree. And I was writing reports. And those reports were for a war crimes commission. And my job was to kind of put them in language that was accessible because I was working with all lawyers. And I kind of made it, my model was journalism. You know, I made these witness testimonies and these legal reports. Like I tried to write them in this journalism way. And I had a great editor there who just was so generous with his time. And I didn't really quite know what I was doing. And every week he just like completely edit my work. Like 2 months later, he was like, "You don't need any more help. Way to go." But, you know, he was brutal and generous and he knew what he was doing. And I just was like totally tuned into that. And I think really that helped my writing the most of any class or any job I took. But how I got into journalism was I finally quit grad school and I didn't get a job as a professor straight away. So I moved with my wife to San Francisco and it was the boom era, the new economy. So I got a job at a magazine covering the internet, the digital revolution, internet business. And to tell you the truth, I had no clips or anything that I could really use. It was just all like this graduate school stuff. And I had all this like UN, like 300 page reports, you know, I was like, how do you put that? How do you give them a clip of that? So I started as a copy editor. I just took a test and I did really well on the test and they hired me. And I started on the copy desk. And from there, I started writing short pieces for other sections of the magazine. And from there, it kind of just snowballed. And once I was making a paycheck, I was like, journalism, this really works. And again, my dad was like, only you would quit the academy for a job in journalism, right as journalism was kind of tanking as a business. I was like, thanks, Dad, thanks. He was always on brand. So that's how I got started, at a magazine in San Francisco and basically using the techniques I learned at the United Nations. So I don't know, it's not exactly a recipe or a formula that I think anyone else should repeat or even try. But it did equip me, I have to say, that preparation, grad school in the United Nations, and then working at a monthly magazine that turned into a bi-weekly magazine that then I ended up writing for websites, and that those were daily. And then I started working at websites that we had to do multiple stories a day. And then I became a blogger and wrote constantly. And then I worked for the Huffington Post. All of that, starting with grad school, like having a lot of different kinds of writing experiences and different kinds of editors and having to write for different audiences and having to write at different speeds. Like the UN, it took like 2 years to write a report. And then in grad school, like to do a journal article, it was like you wrote it and re-edited it and it took about a year to come out. And then at the monthly magazine, it was like a month to do a story. And then it became every 2 weeks, and it boom, 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 boom. So it was a really gradual way to learn how to write really fast for the internet era. And I ended up being good at that. I ended up being the kind of person that can write fast, and not everybody can. So, you know, for better or for worse, I wear a lot of hats and do a lot of different jobs. And so I just kept getting jobs.
Would you say that a student looking to enter media in this day and age should expect to be doing a little bit of everything throughout their career like you did?
One of the questions I ask people like Patrick, who are in Com 457, when we do this final interview, I say, you know, what is one of the most important qualities someone who's working in media can have today? I'm always waiting for them to say, somebody who can learn anything fast and end up doing anything, because I really do think it's like the most important skill is to like try to be as nimble as possible and never forget anything you learn, because it's all useful. And you never know, you know, from one newspaper to the next, to a magazine, to a website, you never know what kind of writing or what kind of editing will be the most useful. I ended up like designing and helping build websites too. It's like, the more you can just do the whole media project, the better. And if you have that really solid grounding in journalism, like ethics and journalism, the questions, like how do you serve the public interest? How do you think about audience? How do you try to make your story as solid as possible? And that structure of the journalism, it's so important, like putting all the really important stuff, working so hard in your brain and on your page, on your screen, to cram all the important stuff right at the top and to package it, headline, subheadline, lead, and then put a character in there with a quote. If you can get that formula down, it just makes it so much easier to write all kinds of different stories. And you're never just looking at the blank page thinking, oh God, what do I do now? So you have to think and think and think, wait, I did all this reporting. What is the thing that matters? And if you've had a lot of experience editing like me, you can see like, what else is going in the publication that day? What kind of story do we need? Like we've got like a feature on the site already, and we've got like a short piece, and we've got kind of a bloggy opinion piece. So maybe we just need like a really solid day story with like three sources, bang, bang, bang. I know that sounds like a kind of a weird way to approach a story, but like, what kind of story do we need today? That became my thing. And then I'd write that story.
Okay. And you mentioned working at the Huffington Post, where the volume of stories was really high. When there is that much, and this is both for you and your colleagues at the time, how do you deal with that fast-paced, high-pressure environment, and how do you acclimate?
I remember the interview for that job, and the people who were interviewing me kept saying things like, well, we really need someone who can be forceful and like sell our stories to the front page. And we really need someone who can stand up to the other people. And we really need someone who doesn't get flustered with volume. And every question they kept asking, I thought, I think these people need some therapy, because it sounds like a really crazy, bad environment and a really hard job. And it was all those things, but it was also really fun. But it was not just that, you guys. It wasn't just that we had a lot of writers contributing, professional writers and editors, but I was hired to help run this citizen journalism project, one of the very first like large versions of that. And it was a project that covered the Obama-McCain election. And we were trying to do how would citizen journalists cover a presidential campaign as opposed to professional journalists, who the idea was that citizens would ask different kinds of questions and produce different kind of copy that might be more interesting and might push the candidates to really address issues rather than just who's winning, who's losing, what political strategy it is. So, but the upshot was that it was really a first experiment in citizen journalism. And all we really had to go on in 2008 was email. And so we'd have people from literally all over, hundreds, sometimes probably in the end, like thousands of people wanting to contribute to the site. And it was like, not only how do we manage the copy flow, but they're citizen journalists, you don't know them, and you're not working in a journalism outfit with them. So you don't know, is this story even real? And how do we fact check it? And what are we exactly doing here? And when we hit publish, are we all going to be like sued, or what's going to happen here? So it wasn't just, you know, when you're working with a whole newsroom and there's lots of volume, that's very difficult. But if you're working with authors, reporters that you don't even know or have much contact with, that's really difficult too. So it was a fire hose. That was like a trial by fire. And every day was like, it was like every day was a 10-hour, like, make it up as you go. And we just had to like read the story, share it with each other, say, should we do this? Should we run this? What questions should we ask? How do we verify it? Who's going to start making the phone calls? Yeah, I don't know how you deal with it. I did a lot of like, I'd get up from my desk and walk around and scream out loud. And then I'd like come back to my desk and be like, everything's fine. but it was such a challenge that you don't even have time to think that, why in the world am I doing this? You know, you're just like, I'm doing this, and then we got to make it work. They issued me a phone, a BlackBerry, and it used to sit by my bed. And the offices were in New York, and we were living in California at the time. So basically my day started for me at like 4 a.m. And that phone would just be ringing and ticking and beeping all night long. My wife was finally like, that phone has to sleep downstairs. It can never come onto the second floor of our house. And it would just, we could hear it in our bed. We could hear it like down in the living room, just being like, beep, 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 all night long.
Open since 2015, Elm Coffee Roasters is devoted to high quality coffee that's easy to brew at home and a joy to drink. At our roastery and cafe in Pioneer Square, Seattle, Elm obsessively roasts small batches of coffee that they source with a focus on sustainable practices that lift up the whole supply chain and protect the future of the coffee plant. Elm's goal is to make a truly exceptional cup of coffee and an experience you look forward to every morning. Cafes in Pioneer Square and SLU open now for takeout, and soon dine-in service. Please use code PODCAST at elmcoffeeroasters.com for 15% off your next order.
Beyond all those challenges that you experienced, what were some of the most rewarding parts of your journalism career?
You know, this is a cliche, but like, it's always the most rewarding, like the last story you published. You're just like, look at that. I did it. I turned nothing into something. And that last good lead that you wrote is your favorite lead until the next day. I really worked on some great projects like that, like the Citizen Journalism Project. I'm so proud of all of us who worked there. It was a really hard thing to do. And I think we did a really good job. I also wrote a couple of stories for the Colorado Independent that really took off. And we were just a very small independent project with low budget, but we used the internet really well, like on certain stories. Like I wrote this one that was about how these Catholic hospitals were basically a pregnant woman died in the hospital and they lost her two kids. She was pregnant. She was about 9 months pregnant. The fetuses could have survived, but they died. And the hospital argued for years in a court case that a malpractice case that because in Colorado, abortion was legal and fetuses didn't have any legal rights, they weren't responsible for the fetuses. And so it was this like the Catholic Church was arguing that fetuses weren't people. It was like this total backwards kind of argument. Anyway, so I wrote about that court case and that story just blew up. And like the New York Times was writing about my little story in Colorado. And because we were a nonprofit, at the bottom of every story, it was like, if you are an outlet anywhere in the country, you can steal the story so long as you give us credit. And so I had like people calling me from like Palm Beach, California, and from Bangor, Maine, being like, you know, I didn't know you were working at our paper. I'm like, I'm not working at your paper. I don't even know where this story landed, but it was like all over the country. And it was, I remember as I was writing it, I was thinking, this could be a really big story. And, and it was a huge story.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. So now today, you've transitioned to more of primarily teaching at UW. I do think that, you know, going from working a career for a long time to eventually wanting to teach that career is a pretty, you know, ordinary, relatable mindset. How did your first transition to teaching eventually happen? And what were the big moves you feel that helped make it happen?
Again, it all seems to look like it was pre-planned, but it wasn't. As I said, I was in grad school forever. And so as an RA and a TA in grad school, I first started teaching college when I was in my 20s. Then I taught like in a comp lit course for a comp lit course and in a couple of business communication courses and history courses. So I never had taught journalism before, but then I ended up living in France for a while. And there I taught at a French university, but I taught writing in English about digital tech and digital business because I was just coming from San Francisco where I was working at that magazine. So I had a visa that was good for teaching, but no other jobs. So I was teaching at this French university, and that was my first time teaching university students about writing and about language. And it just seemed like such a natural fit. I had such a really good experience, and I felt like kind of a man from the future because, like, in Paris during those years, no one even had a modem, an internet modem at home. And I was coming from San Francisco and it was like, felt like a decade ahead. Like I was coming from the future to Paris and telling people like, there's this thing called the internet and it's coming for you. So I was just teaching them kind of like these economic and finance students how to read the English language press and how to write it and getting them to practice writing in English. And turned out to be extremely good practice at teaching and having to adjust courses on the fly and really get a sense of what your students need. You know, I had these ideas every year, every day when I would go in to teach these French classes, and I'd be like, this is how you write an essay. You got to have a thesis, blah, blah, blah. And they'd be like, what are you even talking about? So I would just have to totally break it down on the spot and think. And I just found that, you know, that was a really good experience teaching, and it kind of went on top of when I was a grad student and just first learning how to do it. And then I've taught like intermittently. I've always kind of had a little side job of teaching at different universities. Like when I worked in Colorado as a journalist, I also taught classes at the University of Denver. When we lived in LA for a while, I also taught at the University of Southern California, and I started a digital journalism program there that was about youth politics and culture. I wasn't like teaching in a classroom there. I was actually teaching through an outlet that the graduate students were publishing in. And I found that was really fun too, because it was so hands-on. And like we were all learning together how to do it, how to run a website like that. So as I say, the transition seems to make perfect sense, but it was kind of like, all right, I guess I'll apply for this job at the University of Southern California, or I guess I'll try to teach these French kids how to write in English. You know, it turned out to be great, great experience and a great prep for this artist in residence position that I have at UW, but it was never really a plan, you know, just kind of happened.
It sounds like you've been kind of like all over the world and all over the country. Do you usually sort of follow the jobs and see where that takes you? Or does it just happen like it seems to a lot in your career where you just end up in these places?
Well, it's a combination. Like, you know, I always just kind of like, as I said, when I graduated from undergrad, I just had no real skills except the one thing that I liked to do and that I was kind of good at, and that was writing. So it was like, it's a cliche, but I just was like, I'm following what I'm interested in and kind of what I'm passionate about. So it just kind of has led me all around. And my wife is a professor. So we just always were kind of mobile because that's how both of our careers were. Like I remember us having a conversation, the two of us, right before we had kids. It was kind of like there was some job offer on the table for one of us or both of us. And I remember thinking like, well, we can't just go to where my jobs are, because that's crazy, because journalism jobs, like, they're gone in a year, who knows, you know, maybe you'll get a job forever at the Seattle Times or the New York Times or one of these lucky places that persists. But my experience was really the opposite. Even at really successful publications where I worked, they were bought out and then we were all fired. So I was like, okay, AOL just bought this and like is going to use their people. So I, we were just like, clearly it was like kind of a funny conversation because I was like, should we follow my career or your career? And you're like, ha, that's a joke. Psych, no, we're never following my career. So academics, it's always been that they move around like crazy. So we kind of moved around following my wife's career. And, you know, you can write in a lot of different places and you can teach in a lot of different places. So I guess that's what built up my skills, because like you can do that everywhere you go, writing and teaching.
No, that's great. Sort of fits with the mobile lifestyle. So with, you know, journalism changing so much over the years with technology and social media being pushed so much to the forefront, especially, you know, since you first entered the field, it was really starting. How have opportunities changed or really shifted for those who want to enter the field from when you started?
Well, I mean, one of the answers is in the name of our program. It used to be a journalism program. Now it's a journalism and public interest communication program. It seems like, and I don't think I'm wrong when I say that more people are reading more material every day and more people are publishing more material than was ever published before in the history of ever. I know that the opportunity to get a long-term full-time job in publishing is more difficult now. And I know that the journalism industry is still struggling mightily, but the demand is out there. And the journalism landscape for journalism type of material, for public interest media, for people that can get to the bottom of things and investigate things and watchdog power, the demand for that is huge. It's enormous. And so if you want to do public interest, investigation, writing, reporting, storytelling, the thing is just to be open to doing it in any kind of environment, whether it's as a legislative aide, as a policy aide, as a policy writer, as a nonprofit communication person, as a PR professional. Like if you get a job as a spokesperson for a government office and you've been trained in journalism and to serve the public interest, you know, you're getting paid by taxpayers, not getting paid by the police officers you're communicating for. You're getting paid by the citizens. And if you can serve them and their interests in your communication, you're doing great work. I think you'll be rewarded. And if you keep your eye open for like, what new skills can I always learn? It just seems like there's so much media popping that we all live in this media ocean that, you know, you can make your way, which is easy for me to say at the back end of my career. But I mean, I came in such a non-traditional way. All of the people I worked with in almost every publication I worked with, they went to journalism school and they started out as journalists at journalism publications. But I never had that. You know, I was just like riding on these waves and hoping I didn't fall out of the boat at every point. Keep your eyes open and like just try to get to a place where you can do the kind of writing and reporting that you want to do, the kind of communications, and make the most of it, you know? But always think to yourself, like, it could go away tomorrow, but that's okay. I'm going to find something else.
Well, that was a great answer. It seems like a good place to end to me. Anita, do you have any last questions for John?
That's it.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, John, we really appreciate you coming on this show, and thanks for telling us about journalism today.
All right. Journalism plus.
Journalism plus, exactly.